A mountain goat study could influence helicopter skiing policy in the Chilkat Valley. And Skagway talks trapping regulations. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more coming up next. How does helicopter skiing affect mountain goats in the Chilkat Valley? Until now, there wasn't much research to help answer that question. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game started a study in 2010 tracking where area mountain goats live. Once the study finishes in the next 2 or 3 years, it could provide definitive information about what areas need more or less heliskiing regulation. The wildlife biologist leading that study gave a presentation in Haines Monday night. More than 30 people filled the Chilkat Center lobby to listen to what Kevin White has found out about mountain goats. White says mountain goats are difficult animals to study, which is why there's not a lot of research out there.
It's worth mentioning that mountain goats are one of the least studied large mammals in North America, and so unlike other species like moose or deer or bears, we have a lot less information, a lot less background information, and research has been conducted on mountain goats.
But there is one helpful study out of British Columbia. It shows that mountain goats are sensitive to helicopter flights. That study shows when a helicopter goes by, mountain goats have a movement response that can last up to 2 days. But that's not what the ADF&G study is tackling. They're looking at where mountain goats in the Haines-Skagway area live, or in scientists speak, their critical habitat. Once the state has that information, heliskiing that overlaps with critical habitat could face tougher restrictions. The study's not over, but let's get into what ADF&G has found so far. White says Chilkat Valley is a genetic diversity hotspot for mountain goats. He projected a map of local mountain ranges with numbers showing the genetic variation between goats that live on neighboring mountains.
And on either side of Berners Bay, mountain goats were genetically distinct. And that kind of like initial finding, I was very kind of like blown away by that, because that's a very small area. I mean, any one of us can walk across those flats in just a matter of a few hours.
Even when mountain goats are separated by just a few miles of river, they're very genetically different. White says that's because animals do not like traveling across open flat areas or swimming.
The important take-home message is that when he conducts these kinds of analyses and we talk about there being genetic differences, what that means is there's very limited movement from one population to another.
To put it simply, mountain goats aren't big travelers. They don't move around much. Now, the next point has to do with where mountain goats spend their summers and winters. White says the Chilkat Valley is a transition area between coastal climate and interior climate. That matters because where mountain goats live during the winter depends on the type of snowfall in the area.
And so the mountain goat strategy is really to try and find habitats that have a limited amount of snow, because snow is costly for them to move through, and as well as it will bury food for mountain goats.
In coastal areas where there's more wet, dense snow, mountain goats move downhill to get away from the snow, and they spend the winter at lower elevations.
And this is the case with 95% of the mountain goats that we studied in the eastern Lynn Canal area from the Catskill River down to Berners Bay, all wintered at low elevation. In the Sitka area, all the animals winter at low elevation. The Ketchikan, coastal BC, these maritime areas that have very heavy, wet, deep snowpacks.
For interior areas, mountain goats stay in relatively similar spots during the summer and winter, at high elevations. That's because the snow is more shallow and light. White showed graphics of where goats move in the summer and winter on different mountain ranges.
And then we have this other animal that was up at the northern end of Toksinuk Ridge, which was actually moved up in elevation during the winter.
In the mountains where goats winter at high elevations, their habitat is more likely to overlap with heliskiing. White says this study will continue for at least 2 or 3 more years. He wants to continue to put GPS-linked collars on goats to have a bigger pool of data. Right now, they're tracking 32 animals. But White says maintaining funding might be an issue. So what could come of this research? White showed a map of the Chilkat Valley with red blotches covering some of the mountains. The red marks critical mountain goat habitat. This map could be used in comparison to a map of heliskiing spots.
You can go to each specific spot on the landscape and assign it to one of these different categories to help determine where are the places where the hard decisions have to be made.
Haynesboro Tourism Director Leslie Ross attended the presentation. She says once the heliskiing regulations are up for review again, the borough will take the goat research into consideration. And Kevin White plans to come back to Haynes in about a year to give an update on the mountain goat study. In Haynes, I'm Emily Files. Trapping regulations are once again a topic of discussion in Skagway. KHNS's Margaret Friednauer has more.
The Skagway Assembly in June passed an ordinance regulating trapping within the municipality after several months of work in the Civic Affairs Committee. There was a lot of back and forth between proponents of stricter trapping regulations and those not wanting the borough to restrict trapping. A few weeks after the ordinance passed, the Alaska Trappers Association sent a letter to Borough Attorney Bob Blasco, suggesting Skagway did not have the authority to regulate trapping because that's the state's job, according to the Alaska Constitution. The letter from the Trappers Association's attorney asked the Skagway Assembly to strike the ordinance from its code. That letter is followed up a few weeks later by one from Assistant Attorney General Cheryl Brooking with the State Department of Law. Brooking seems to agree with the Trappers Association that the Skagway ordinance is in conflict with state regulations for fishing game. Blasco responded in August to the letters in a memo to the Skagway Assembly. He says in his legal opinion, the municipality does have authority to regulate land use for public safety, which was one of the reasons cited by the Assembly in passing the trapping ordinance. Blasco also points out that at least four other municipalities in the state have local trapping regulations. They are Juneau, Valdez, Cordova, and Anchorage. Some of those ordinances have been on the books for as long as 10 years, and none of them have been challenged before. Blasco says there are some minor changes the Assembly could make to its ordinance to make sure it isn't running afoul of the state constitution. For example, Blasco says the ordinance should not prohibit leg trap holds specifically, but it could prohibit all kinds of trapping in a certain area. Former Assemblymember Jim Sager chaired the Civic Affairs Committee when it addressed the trapping issue earlier this year. Now that position is held by new Assemblymember Angela Greaser. A committee meeting last week on the issue did not result in any recommendations on how to proceed. Greaser is out of town at the Alaska Municipal League Conference in Anchorage and was not available for comment. One of the issues discussed at the meeting was the setbacks defined in the current ordinance, prohibiting trapping within a certain distance of designated trails. Exactly how to determine what is considered a designated trail was also discussed. Assemblymember Spencer Morgan, chair of the Parks and Recreation Committee, said he will be bringing up that issue at a future meeting.
Coastal Alaskans have been watching for signs of radiation from 2011's Fukushima nuclear plant accident in Japan. Now, an oceanography institute says trace amounts have been detected off the west coast. Radiation experts say the very low levels measured do not pose a health threat here. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports.
The post-earthquake and tsunami nuke plant accidents spilled a large amount of radioactive contamination into the Pacific 3 years ago. Oceanographers projected it would take until this year for highly diluted traces to reach the west coast of North America. And ta-da! A recent research cruise from Dutch Harbor, Alaska to Eureka, California, detected the front edge of the plume between 100 and 1,000 miles offshore. Ken Bissler is a senior scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution.
The levels offshore still are quite low. So by that, I mean there are a couple units of these becquerels per cubic meter, something that is about 1,000 times less than, say, a drinking water standard.
Bissler says he's reluctant to trivialize any amount of radiation, but says he personally has no concerns about swimming, boating, or eating fish from local waters. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. We had reports from Margaret Friednauer and Tom Bonsi. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.